The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome back, Red Sox Nation. Some big things happening under the surface, not only of the Boston Red Sox, but of course, Major League Baseball as a whole. Of course, we were going to initially talk about the free agent class, look at the list that the guys went into last episode, go down a few more players. However, we've decided to pivot last moment to talk about a few comments that Breslow has made and hopefully the bearing of the future of the Boston Red Sox. I'm Nick the Voice, joined tonight by Terry Cushman Jr. and Chris Felico, and we are the Bastards of Boston. Now, I think that this is a good place to start. Of course, the starting pitching. This is something that the Red Sox have been really up and down with for years. Obviously, Garrett Crochet became an anchor this year. But when it comes to the guys behind him, I think, funnily enough, Breslow put it quite well. And I have a quote up here that I'm just going to kick off the episode by reading. He said, starting pitching, and particularly someone we feel who can start alongside or slot in behind Garrett and start a playoff game for us. Last season, Bayo played that role for the majority of season. Lucas played that role for the majority of the season. Because of the depth that we built up over the last couple of years, we felt pretty good about overall starting pitching and numbers 3 through 10-ish. And that's not to take away from guys who are certainly capable of doing more. And more just to say, I don't think we're going to spend a ton of time trying to add a number 4 or number 5 starter, saying that they want a guy who can pitch at the front of the rotation and start a game. This is, quite frankly, exactly what we wanted to hear, right? We wanted a serious number 1 or number 2 to go alongside Garrett Crochet. The depth is an asset right now that the Red Sox have. But because of that, you can't really add to the back of the rotation with a guy like, just to throw out a name, Verlander, you know, Zach Littell. You really want a top-of-the-line guy. Do any names come to your guys' mind? And what was your reaction to Breslow's comments?
I'm going to go first.
Terry guy? Or Chris, your choice.
We can paper, rock, scissors. No, just kidding. Go ahead. I suck at that game.
Well, first of all, I mean, completely shocked in a good way, pleasantly surprised, I'll say, because I think for much of Breslow and even Heim Bloom and, you know, the last two regimes really at the front office, when we're in these situations where it's evident and clear to Red Sox fans and even GMs and other fan bases across MLB of what we need, we'll usually get quotes similar to what we heard, but not with the specifics of we're not looking for a 3 or a 4. We want top of the line. Like that quote could have just as easily been something like, yeah, we're really confident in the pitching that we have. You know we need to upgrade the rotation, but we like a lot of the guys we have. We just need people to step up, you know, something along those lines. And to get as granular as he did excites me because what it does, he paints himself into a corner because now if you don't deliver that, it's like, well, Craig, you're the one who said we needed it. We knew it, but you said it. So I'm excited. I'll be pleasantly surprised if we're able to execute that. And I have a little bit of confidence in it. As far as specific names, I mean, I think Joe Ryan's an obvious one. Obviously, Dylan Cease is probably another one out there. I think the one that's extremely interesting, obviously a long shot, but it's hard to ignore just because we've literally been attached to it now for about a week and a half, 2 weeks, is Tarik Skubal, right? Who is essentially more than likely going to be the AL Cy Young Award winner. If it's Garrett Crochet, I'll be happy for him, but I think it's going to be Skubal, and it would be much deserved. He'd go back-to-back. And, I mean, I'd be happy with any of those, to be honest with you. Obviously, for me, it would probably go Skubal. Then I'd probably say Joe Ryan, maybe Cease would be third. I know Framber Valdez is another name that's been thrown in there. I know Terry's very high on him. But I mean, any of those guys would be great. Obviously, the pathway to getting them looks a lot different for each one. But yeah, I mean, let's go. Let's get one of those guys and start from there.
So Nick essentially hit the nail on the head. You know, the Breslow quote was concise. It was very clear, and there was nothing cryptic about it. And we haven't been getting that since the Dombrowski era. And so it was nice to hear it. I'm not conspiracy theorist, like, oh, he's just saying that because, you know, the extreme haters are going to say that. And for the record, I'm still a hater, but, you know, not an extreme hater, but I'm a hater until Breslow, you know, can finally win my confidence, you know, from not just the winter, but 365 days a year. It's a 365 day a year job, you know. You make moves in November and December. You know, you do some housekeeping in January and February, just kind of shoring things up. And then as the season goes, you need to, you know, you need to manipulate the roster. You need to target people you might acquire as the season progresses towards the trade deadline. He's not checked off all those boxes at all. In fact, when opening day starts, I think he's been a terrible executive. So, you know, if he wants to be a longtime executive in Boston, then, you know, he needs to check off all the boxes. You know, I'm looking at years past real quick. Championships past. You had Pedro and Schilling, two Hall of Famers. Schilling was a dumbass and ran his mouth, and that's why he's not in the Hall of Fame, but he is a Hall of Famer. Josh Beckett falls a little short, you know, if he would have taken better care of himself. You know, he looked like a Hall of Famer for much of his career. He just didn't have the longevity. Then you had Lester and Lackey, and then Chris Sale, David Price. You had a power punch. You have never won a championship without a power-packed 1-2. And maybe Lester Lackey is the weakest of that group, but they had won championships previously to that 2013 title, and they were big performers in the month of October. You know, they might have been 1B starters, you know, not quite the true aces like some of those other names. So that's what Breslow needs to do this winter. He needs that power punch to go with Garrett Crochet. And I was just thinking today, too, I don't think Chapman's going to be as good. I think he's going to be good, but just not as good. I think the same for Whitlock. I mean, he was just phenomenal last year from May forward. I mean, when you're that good, you need to expect a little bit of regression. And then I was thinking Bayo. I don't know if Bayo is going to be quite as stout. So that just underscores the need to be aggressive. Go get that guy to take the pressure off of the Bayos. And I don't even know who our number four is. Honestly, it's not Giolito. It might be Connolly early, but that's a small sample size. So anyway, and then finally, let me just pivot back to Ryan, because that's the name that's not going to go away until we sign someone. You know, Here's where I have a little bit of pause. If we're aiming for Joe Ryan, we all want him, right? Is he our number one choice? Would he be your number one choice?
No, school would be.
Oh, come on. Okay. I'll let you have it, actually. That's fine. Because he is going to get traded. But he's your second choice, Chris.
Yeah, he would be my second
choice. Okay. All right. Well, all right.
Probably top three, you know, without okay. looking.
Okay. I mean, he might. I think Joe Ryan is way more realistic than Tarek Skubal. And I'm just going to be honest.
Oh, I agree with that.
Yeah. And here's my thing. If he's out there and he's going to be available, multiple teams will be in on him. So is Craig Breslow going to be willing to outbid all the other teams with the best prospect package. So that's where I'm putting cold water on Joe Ryan.
It's a really good question, especially looking at the deadline that we had and hearing those murmurs that other teams just weren't that interested in a lot of the prospects that we were trying to give them. That is the scary part, I think, of approaching any deal when it comes to adding via trade this offseason. You know, in theory, we have the capital for it. You have Duran and Abreu, who in theory both could be gone, really. But at least one of them, obviously, we can talk a little bit more about Duran because I think some comments have been made about that. But ultimately, if you're going to improve via trade, you need to understand that the reason you're doing that for whoever you trade for, if you trade for a bat, you have to think, okay, that's because we would rather spend the money that we have on a pitcher, right? Or vice versa. You know, if you trade for pitching, you're like, okay, well, maybe it's time to spend the money on a bat. Because ultimately, this Red Sox team has the potential to be very good, but it's almost like a puzzle where you need to equip it with a few plugs into the holes that are there. You need to fill the gaps, whether it's power, whether it's getting another infielder, whether it's getting a true DH, whether it's getting an ace starting pitcher, whether it's getting a combination of all of those things, preferably. You need to figure out which guys are attainable with money, which guys are attainable with a trade for prospects. The nice thing about starting pitching is that we could go out and trade for a guy like Ryan, or we could go out and we could sign a guy like Suarez or Cease, like you guys mentioned. King is an honorable mention. Framber Valdez is a guy who I was really big on until, of course, he did that little tantrum with his catcher, and that kind of made me a bit hesitant about his status in the clubhouse. But ultimately, I do think that there are some interesting names there. But like you said, Terry, is Breslow going to be decisive enough to go out and execute?
So I want to add something in there. So number one, I see Jules, one of our regulars here, saying Skeens. So I'm going to re-up my order. Skeens would be number one, then Skubal, then Joe Ryan, even though Skeens. Although I do think Skeens is probably going to be in a similar situation at Skubal in the coming years where they're going to be forced to trade Skeens because he's not going to re-sign in Pittsburgh. I think they could offer him crazy money and he still wouldn't. No one wants to play for them, but that's beside the point. This is where I think things are interesting for the Sox, and even this is a maybe coming to Jesus moment for Breslow and why I'm happy that all the prospects came up. And I don't want to say failed because they didn't fail, but let's just face it, it did not go smoothly, right? Like, Christian Campbell comes up, tears the cover off the ball, and then forgets how to swing. Didn't really have great defense. They have to put him down to AAA, struggle there for a little bit, and then just kind of was 50-50 the rest of the season, even though he didn't end up coming back up. Marcelo Meyer comes up, shows fantastic defense with the glove. Streaky at the plate at best and gets injured, shocker, which has been his MO. Romananthi comes up, struggles. I mean, was a singles merchant, as I called them, and then all of a sudden started to show power, and then unfortunately gets hurt, and that kind of was the kaput on our offense and pretty much started to put the nail in our coffin for the season. And why I think this is important is it's eminently clear for Breslow that there's no perfect opportunity to take a look at this and say you can't rely on prospects. I think if only one of those guys came up, and even if they absolutely sucked or had a catastrophic injury, there's the thought of, all right, well, I still got three that are coming up. Like, all of them can't suck and or get hurt. But in this particular case, they either sucked or got hurt, if we're being honest with ourselves. And the fact that that happened, if it's not clear where it's like, okay, yeah, you know what? Like, these guys could turn out to be superstars, but there's absolutely no guarantee. And if I have to part ways with some of them for people that are guarantees, now granted, they could get hurt, but it's professional sports. It can happen to anyone. There's no better opportunity to reflect on the past season, see what the downfalls and the pitfalls were for us, and then also take a look and say, okay, we literally had everything go wrong with our prospects, and this is where we're at. Do I think that that is going to tip him to make those moves? No. But I do think it's an interesting case for him where I can't for sure say that he's not going to consider that and say, okay, now I'd be maybe a little bit more apt to be willing to part with those people and some of the other names, the password and all these people that are, you know, a tier below. So it's interesting to consider.
You know, I'm pretty, generally speaking, I'm pretty open-minded here. I mean, Framber Valdez, I'm willing to give him a pass on the previous thing because there was nothing else leading up to that in the last several years. Okay, we all have a bad day. And I just think the culture in Boston, Trevor Story, Roman Anthony, Zidane Rafaela, Rob Refsnyder, if he's back, Alex Cora, I just think he would be fine in this culture. It's not like David Price, who just showed up to spring training, by the way. I saw a tweet. Not sure what he's doing there. But, you know, as soon as Price gets signed, I'm like, ooh, this market is just going to eat him up. And it was even uglier than I ever could have imagined. You know, that type of thing would horrify me. I can't even think of a guy anymore that would be bad for Boston. I mean, who's a really cancerous player in MLB off the top of your head? Tim Anderson doesn't play anymore, so.
Yeah, and I was going to say Marcus Stroman a couple years ago might have fit that bill.
Yeah, but exactly.
Not really. Toxic. Doesn't qualify anymore.
Yeah, so I don't know what's changed, I guess. I think I don't know if players are more culturally aware now than they were. So I'll give Valdez a pass. I guess he's like pitched like the most innings or something since 2019. There were a couple of neat stats. I forget what they were. Most wins or something. I mean, he's an attractive piece, and he's not going to be a $200 million a year guy. You know, that's right up my alley. You know, if you can get a guy between 100 and 130 million on a 5 or 6 year deal, I'm all for it. Nick, you mentioned Ranger Suarez. The thing that's appealing to me as far as Suarez is the postseason pedigree. That guy shows up in the month of October. And so, you know, I don't know. Honestly, I don't know how to put a market on him. Nola got 7 years, 175. That sounds high to me. But, you know, for a guy like Suarez, so we'll see. But generally speaking, I'm open-minded. I just want a guy who meets the criteria of a number two, and I'm willing to go with it. And, you know, we'll look at the advanced metrics later. How are they at Fenway? How are they against this division? You know, what does the Savant chart look like in certain metrics? And we're going to be covering all of these guys as last night was part one of the Major League baseball trade rumors top 50 list. We do that every year. You can go back and listen to last year's. I'm sure we were way off, but I think everybody is. But yeah, so we'll get into a lot of these guys very specifically in the coming days. We'll probably have this list wrapped up, maybe not next week, but by the following week early on, which would be ahead of the winter meetings. But yeah, I just want to be a big market team. And I mentioned all those 1-2 punches from all of those previous championships. I don't want to go into another season again without a 1-2 punch because you don't win championships without them.
Absolutely. And I mean, you can see what a guy like Yamamoto was able to do for the Dodgers in this most recent World Series. A guy like that took a team that was already a champion and made them a champion again, helped to make them a champion, throwing a complete game, you know. Adding a guy of that caliber is so important, just like Garrett Crochet was able to completely transform this Red Sox pitching staff, this rotation, I should say. Adding a guy right behind him of maybe not the similar caliber because there's really only a few names that come to mind, but of that upper echelon. I mean, it's so important. And it will be really interesting to see because ultimately, like I mentioned, you know, we have a certain amount of prospects. We have a certain amount of talent on the major league roster that we're willing to move. And we have a certain amount of money that we're willing to spend. And we don't know how much that is. Hopefully it's a good amount, but a few things that are interesting that I wanted to bring up actually was I alluded to Jarren Duran, and there's been a lot of speculation about his status with Bob Nightingale, who maybe doesn't have the best track record when it comes to certain predictions, but I do agree with him here. He says it would be a huge surprise if Duran is in Fort Myers, Florida, come spring training. And it does seem to me like Duran is the odd man out in this outfield. You have just a lot of talent. And sure, we saw this year Breslow almost become vindicated in some way, which I kind of hate, which is where he was saying, oh, well, we have a logjam until guys get injured. And then everyone got injured, you know. But ultimately, there's no point in retaining a player of that caliber who Duran, regardless of his splits, he's a 162 type of guy. I think he's earned that. And I think a lot of teams view him that way. I think it's a waste to not give him that just because there's such an excess of talent on the roster and have him be a bench piece or a part-time piece or a backup rather than trade capital. Maybe he could be the Joe Ryan type of acquisition. I've also seen a couple other crazy names thrown around. Fernando Tatis, who Terry earlier in the year mentioned on his wish list. Suddenly Tatis, I see his name getting thrown around. I don't know what the weight behind that is. And a surprising one is seeing Ketel Marte's name getting tossed around, who I would have loved a year ago. And then I thought, oh, well, he signed that big extension. Arizona doesn't want to ditch him. But now I'm hearing his name tossed around. So maybe Duran could be involved for a pitcher like, you know, Joe Ryan, or maybe for a hitter at a different position. We don't really know. What are your guys' thoughts on the whole situation?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some interesting names on there. You know, you both made good points. You said it before, Nick, like they have to really understand who they want to trade for and who they want to sign for. Because the thing is, there's so many names out there that are interesting on the trade market. And while we have assets, we're going to have to splurge with some of them to get something, right? Which is going to take away the opportunity to get pitching and hitting, at least from my perspective, like grade A on both ends, unless you literally just get rid of the farm. Or you could take advantage of a team that's just desperate. If you take a quote unquote bad contract, which I mean, we have the money because we got rid of a ton of contracts at this point, right? So I would love to have Fernando Tatis. I would be interested in Ketel Marte. As far as Jaron Duran, I do think he is the odd man out. And I agree with you. Like at this stage of his career, he's still a 162 player. I think the thing is of all the people that we have log jamming the outfield, if we were immediately going to contend for World Series, I might say he's not the guy I would trade. But like we're not there. We're still a couple of pieces away. And with another year under his belt and of age, like his assets and the things that he's able to leverage on, they're going to diminish over the next couple of years. And you're going to have to give him a contract, and that's going to age poorly. So, it's unfortunate. He's kind of been part of the heartbeat of this team for the last 3 or 4 years. But I do think it's appropriate for him to go. And then as far as something that you said, Terry, that with Joe Ryan, it's a good point. And what gives me pause about a Joe Ryan is, you know, like when we got Garrett Crochet, I mean, he's playing for like the worst team ever at that point, right? With the Chicago White Sox. We didn't know without a shadow of a doubt he was going to come to Boston, tear it up and become a bona fide ace and be able to handle this market, leaving that albatross. And just with the Sox luck and just the law of averages, to go out there and get another guy from that division, the Minnesota Twins, who haven't sniffed realistically big game baseball in October in a long time. Like even when they make the playoffs, it's like, we know they're getting bounced for the Yankees in the first round. Let's just all call it what it is. But the chance that we hit lightning twice and strike and we get a 1-2 out of that division seems like a long shot to me when you kind of said what you said, which would give me pause for concern in trading assets to get him. Versus with maybe giving a little bit more to get a guy that you're confident can pitch in October. I think outside of Skeens, who has never pitched a big game, but he's just an absolute like prodigy level star. I don't know if maybe we should be trading the assets that we have for a guy that we hope can be number two. Yeah, their stats may say it, but to your point, unless they're doing it in the big moments in October and we're confident they could do it here in Boston, a top 3 or 5 market in this sport, that's a scary thought.
Joe Ryan, I'll pull him up here in a second. He, the other thing too, you have to remember is, you know, we took a momentary sigh of relief when we acquired him and we're like, oh, thank goodness we made a move, but it was just brief because now we're like, he's going to walk after what, two more years? You have to lock him up. You just traded the biggest package since Chris Sale. Now you have to lock him up. And we had a guy that's never locked anyone up, you know? So after you give up the major haul for Ryan, you've got that same level of stress all over again. And I didn't manage to get him up. I think he does have, here we go, 2 years left. So not a huge rush. Yeah, 2028, he's a free agent. So he's RB2 this year. And then he is, I think he's about 29. Yep. Turns, wow, he's got the same birth as my brother, June 5th. So he'll be 30, you know, coming into next year. So I was thinking he'll probably get a bigger contract than Crochet. Crochet got 170, but maybe not. Maybe it'll be right in that neighborhood. So, you know, we'll see. What I'm saying here with Joe Ryan is it's an extremely complex type of trade. So I don't know that Breslow really wants to get into that when there's plenty of guys out there that aren't going to break the bank. And we've already mentioned all the names. The other thing I want to address here is Nick mentioned Jarren Duran. I think Duran would be great for a guy like Ketel Marte, because we desperately need infielders right now. The only one you have for sure is Trevor Story. Nobody's playing third base at the moment. It's probably Nick Sogard if you put a gun to someone's head. You know, we're pro-violence here, and we talk about guns to heads a lot. If this is your first show, we're kidding. If it's your 12th show, you've heard it at least twice. So yeah, we don't have a third baseman. I guess Romy is your second baseman most of the time. And we're going to get into some first base talk here momentarily. But I think Duran might get you a one-for-one type deal with a Marte type guy. Just go to a team that's got a surplus of infielders. You can get a third baseman. Maybe that's how you get your third baseman. I don't have any names off the top of my head, but you know, just try a one-for-one with Duran. Tatis, that's the dream. I've been dreaming that, and you know, for a couple off seasons now. It's going to take obviously more than Duran, but he does have a lot of money on the books. So it's not necessarily going to be a mega trade necessarily, because you're taking on a lot of money. The Padres are not going to eat any money. That's the appeal for the Padres to trade him. They've got a nasty family feud going on behind the scenes right now. A loaded payroll. They had to take out a $40 million loan the season before last just to cover payroll. And so, yeah, but you could take advantage and at least not have to give up a massive package. And then you've got, what's your outfield? It's Tatis and Anthony every day.
It frees you up to trade Abreu as well, quite frankly.
Yeah, and what I was also thinking with the Duran trade, Breslow spoke so glowingly of Rafaela and Abreu getting Gold Gloves and how we by far had the best defensive outfield in Major League Baseball. So I'd be shocked if they do deal Abreu, but who knows? It could happen. So yeah. And I want to make this one last thing before I kick it back to you. This is how flimsy I feel sometimes. And I hate that I just called myself that, but 2 winters ago, I was screaming from the mountaintops, extend Tristan Casas. Extend him now before he gets ridiculously expensive. 1 year later, I was eating my words saying, thank goodness. Thank goodness no one answered that call. And then last winter, I was screaming from the mountaintops, extend Jarren Duran. And Duran didn't nearly have as big of a fall from grace, but you know, it was a complicated year. And, you know, he did regress and you got to trade him before the value gets any lower. And I'm all in other words, on trading Duran, which is a complete 180 from where I was at a year ago.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, hindsight is ultimately the greatest cure to a lot of speculation. I mean, I've been so wrong on so many players. It's just ridiculous. And that's sort of the nature of the sport. I mean, you have this uncertainty with everyone, like Chris always says about prospects, but even with proven talent, how many strange cases have you seen? For every great career, you're always going to find a Matt Harvey that sort of sticks in the back of your mind, or a Syndergaard, you know, who you just can't stop thinking about, like, oh, am I going to sign the wrong ace this offseason? And there's no real way to know. The nice thing about the free agent class and the trade pool right now is that you have options, and not just on the pitching side of things, but on the hitting side of things too. You know, I was really concerned about approaching this year with the infield. I said the worst case scenario is that Marcelo Mayer would be playing third base for us once Bregman leaves. I would be okay with that if we did get a Ketel Marte type of player to be second base. It really is going to depend on what Arizona wants for him. And it's really going to be interesting to hear if we get any leaks or anything like that. What changed their tune? Because they just extended that guy, and now they're saying, this dude, you know, now he's available. Maybe it's not a condemnation of him. Maybe it's a condemnation of the roster as a whole. Maybe Arizona just thinks, you know what? We're out of this for 3 years, you know? So give our star away, you know? But you have interesting names out there in the form of trade, like we just mentioned, or in the form of free agents. One big one that, I mean, we keep hearing, I'll get to in a moment. Of course, you have the lower tier. You have Bo Bichette, who may very well return to Toronto. We'll see. You have Kyle Schwarber, who's getting a little older, but certainly has a couple more years of good baseball in him, no doubt. Of course, he's kind of a perma-DH there. But then you have the Alex Bregman and the Pete Alonso, both of whom, well, we know Alex Bregman, obviously, but both of whom I think would be a pretty good fit for Fenway. Coming over from Japan, you also have the player of Munetaka Murakami, who the betting odds are claiming we are a favorite to get. And that scares me, because if that's what we settled for, no offense to this guy, I found the stat. I was talking with both Terry and Chris before the show went live that I was looking for a stat on him that I heard. He has posted a 95 average in the Nippon Baseball League against pitches of 93 miles per hour or faster. He strikes out a lot. He whiffs a lot. This dude is frightening to me. And I just saw a quote from Eric Longenhagen saying, if he ends up having a similar career to Joey Gallo, that's a win. Not for the Red Sox, it's not. Maybe for him it is. Good on him. Absolutely. Make your money. Hit some home runs. But the Red Sox need a sure thing. Pete Alonso is coming off a great year and, very interestingly enough, does not have a qualifying offer attached. Maybe that makes him alluring. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I do not want Murakami. Just saw the funniest meme. It's that famous Mad Men one where it's John Hamm and he's like pitching to the office and it's like, we're going to sign all the Japanese players, just the bad ones. And that's so Red Sox, because that seems like that's what happens. We're always out on ones that are surefires. And then we end up with Masataki Yoshida. Although, playoff hero this year, Masataki Yoshida. But yeah, I want nothing to do with that guy. Pete Alonso, it's hard not to want him. The only thing that just I have pause for concern is the defense. Like, his, do I really want to weaken an infield that's already just like just a thrown ball away from a little league home run at any given moment, in any given game? But, I mean, that bat would be perfect, and we really do need a right-handed power bat. Bregman, I mean, I guess on the right deal, I'd be okay with bringing him back. The health does concern me. And then Schwarber, yeah, like, I'd be good with Schwarber. The thing is, it's like, we're already lefty-heavy, though. a lot would have to, I'd have to see if there's trades that we make, if we get creative or able to get someone, like if we got a Tatis, get me Schwarber. You know what I mean? Like at that point, put Schwarber at DH. I'm good. Tristan Casas, I mean, what do we do with him at this point?
Put him in AAA and see if he can stay healthy for a year. I don't know.
So it seems like there's the universe is really just pulling Pete Alonso to Fenway Park. And it sounds like Breslow's interested. There's reports saying, yeah, we like Pete Alonso. And he is going to be a DH eventually. And Alonso was quoted as recently saying that, yeah, probably by the end of whatever deal I sign, I will be a DH. And I think the bad news is if you're hoping for Schwarber and Alonso, you're not getting them because one's going to block the other. So if you miss out on Alonso, maybe you don't miss out on Schwarber. But the thing that I think would be nice about Alonso is I think the Mets have had a culture problem a lot over the years. They've had an owner that just loves turbulence. They, every second year they fire their manager. It's just not great. Like Lindor and Jeff McNeil were playing grab ass in the tunnel, you know, a couple years ago. I don't know what that was all about. I can't imagine like Lindor being mad, like, you know, so the fact that that happened. And I think Pete Alonso is sick of it. He's just sick of the bad culture. And coming to Fenway, I don't know that we have the championship vibe yet, but the culture is good. And, you know, he's a veteran voice. And I just think he would thrive. I think he'd have a new lease on life. I think Fenway Park would be perfect. We haven't had a big right-handed power threat since either Mookie Betts or JD Martinez, take your pick. Bogarts would golf a few, you know, but I wouldn't say, you know, he was never going to flirt with 40 home runs, for instance. And, you know, so you would finally have that guy in Alonso. And this is where I'm going to piss half of the audience off. Just imagine if you went back a year ago and you got Alonso instead of Bregman, you'd still have Devers. None of that goes down. Devers, he's either going to be your third baseman until he has hamstring problems, then he's your DH, but he's going to be in the middle of your lineup. Devers and Alonso would be nasty. And so you'd be getting half of that with signing Alonso, and maybe Anthony is the new Devers, and he could be. But man, what a presence in the three or four spot with a guy like Alonso. And you're hearing Alonso's name a lot. One name you're not hearing a lot of is Alex Bregman, and I don't want to hear that name. It was fun for a year. Thanks for coming. Please don't come back. You're not invited back to the barbecue. Yeah. Who's the other? You're not hearing Giolito either. I know we're talking, but those are two names from last year. Prominent names. You're not hearing them. So give me Alonso. I'm all in. The panda bear didn't work, but the polar bear will.
I like that. I like that a lot. Both the outlook and the slogan. I agree. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, like I mentioned before in the show, it's a puzzle. This team needs pop. It was sorely lacking power, and even with Bregman, you know, and so we're really going to need some guys to come in here and change this offense for the better, because the Red Sox really did regress last year. And we need that stat, the offensive output, the runs scored, to improve, you know, without question. We just didn't look like a playoff lineup. Even if we were perfectly healthy, I don't think that we were a playoff lineup. And so adding a guy, whether it's Alonso, whether it's Marte, maybe it's both, you know. But one thing that's interesting, speaking of power, one of our big power hitters, Trevor Story, is, of course, sticking around, which is very good. I think a lot of us were happy for that. The problem, of course, is that the news just broke, right? We got the quote that apparently Trevor Story, they are committed to him as their shortstop going forward. And that makes me seriously wonder, what does that mean for Meyer? What does Craig Breslow think he sees in Trevor Story? Because him at second base, absolutely sure thing. Him pushing Meyer to another position makes me wonder, are they even in on Meyer at all? Because he was supposed to be the shortstop of the future.
Yeah, it's an interesting way to look at it. And especially, I mean, if the betting odds have us getting Murakami, you're not putting Meyer at third, unless you're putting him at third and then you're putting Murakami at first. Because apparently he can play first base. But then if you're getting Pete Alonso, means he's going right to DH, which I guess if that was the case, to get Alonso, I'd be willing to get Murakami. Is Murakami even good at defense? Does anyone know?
I'm not sure.
All right, well,
I know he's played quite a bit at both positions, but I'm not too sure at what he's done there.
If he's sound defensively and we get Alonso at DH and then I got to deal with Meyer at third base, I guess I could live with it. I was not that happy about Story. I think he had a good season. I still get very concerned about injuries. And just even, you know, him at shortstop, like his range, yeah, he still has highlight plays. Every show games where you're like, wow, like that was a great play. And he's got these web gems. But his arm's getting weaker. If we were committed to putting him at second base, I'd be fine with it. But that doesn't seem to be the case. And obviously now we're committed to him being at shortstop. I don't like that for Meyer. But to your point, who knows? We might be out on Meyer behind closed doors at this point. He might even be a name that they're already prepared to put into a package, which could change everything. In which, if you're going to put him in a package or like that caliber, then I have to be honest. Like, I want more than Joe Ryan. Like, I'm just going to be honest. I'm not – that doesn't do it for me. Because I feel like if you're going to get Joe Ryan, you could give less. Like, I'd rather give a bunch of the two A's, give them all, and then one of the top pitching prospects. You start throwing Marcelo Meyer, Christian Campbell – and some of the other talent, like I want a better pitcher at that point.
First of all, if we sign Murakami, I am going to lose my bleeping mind. Okay. I'm tired of chasing unicorns because there's no such thing as a unicorn. All right. The dude is Bobby Dalbec with strikeout rate, and I don't want to spend big money on anything less than a sure thing. Okay. If he signs with the Giants and becomes a first ballot Hall of Famer, I'll take the L. Fine. But I don't want to do that. You know, we're counting down the days. Well, not the days. There's too many days, but we're counting down the years for the Yoshida deal to finally run up. I mentioned on one of the more recent shows, we did the same thing with Sandoval. When does that money finally come off the books? When does the Pedroia money? I don't want any more dead money on this team. So if Breslow does this, that's dumb. And here's another thing too. Oh, and let me just say this about Meyer real quick, because the next thing is kind of might have multiple layers. I think he's going to be on the team unless he's in the Joe Ryan trade, because that could happen. I think he's very plausible at second, very plausible at third. And Matt points out in the stream, you know, what's wrong with him at third? I think third prevents a lot of injuries. I think he's less likely to get injured at that position. So if that's going to keep him healthy, maybe that's why we're not hearing much about Bregman anymore. Maybe because it's going to be Meyer all along. I don't know. And I'm for that. The thing that I hate is I don't like how Cora managed him last year. I want him in the lineup every day. He's not a platoon guy. Stop platooning all of your lefties. You know, and I think that ship has sailed on Abreu. I think he's a platoon guy for the rest of his career. And that's a major disservice that Alex Cora did to him. So don't do it again with Meyer. But here's the thing. I don't know how many years Breslow is signed to. It's usually a 3 to 5 year deal for a president of baseball ops, chief baseball officer. If he had an underwhelming winter this year, I think he's gone at the end of next year. Even if we make the playoffs and we get bounced the same exact way, I think he's gone. So he needs to have a big winter. I think he knows he needs to have a big winter. And Nesson ratings were up last year, and I rolled my eyes because we've got this stupid platoon dynasty that everybody was drinking the punch. And I'm like, oh, that's because Nesson ratings are up. They're going to feel like that's the model now. That's the model of a team that will put butts in seats, will put viewership on the TV, you know, sell commercial space, blah, blah, blah. And so Breslow's aggressive comments earlier kind of, you know, that makes me think we're going to have at least a decent winter. So if he has a big winter and then we get into the postseason next year and go at least a round, get out of that wild card, or better yet, win the division. I think winning the division in and of itself saves Breslow's job. We haven't done it in, it'll be 8 years at the end of this year since we last did it. Earlier in the week, I was questioning, could this be Breslow's last year if it's a bad one and it's an underwhelming winter? It's trending towards no at the moment.
That being said, though, I do think, you know, it's fair to characterize this as a last stand of sorts. You know, this season, he was coming into it with a fairly impressive winter that he was able to salvage. We came in with Bregman added, Crochet added, Chapman added, who exceeded expectations. This winter is going to be a sort of redemption moment, funnily enough, for a lackluster trade deadline, the Devers botch, as you mentioned, Terry. This is a chance to sort of make amends with the Red Sox fan base and show, yep, we're serious, we're here, it's time to, you know, stop pretending, time to stop holding your breath. Or it's going to be another retooling year where we go in the same exact way that we are right now. I mean, if we end up with like you guys have already said, if we end up with like Murakami, even Dylan Cease, I know has some red flags. I love his strikeout ability. Everyone does, but I do have some doubts about him being number two in the rotation. I mean, if that's what we wind up with, that's a massive disappointment. And worlds apart from a Pete Alonso, Ranger Suarez, Kettle Marte type of haul, you know, obviously. I'm sure there are even some decent diamonds in the rough that you could go out and get that people aren't talking so much about, whether it's in the foreign free agent pile. I forget his name, but there's a Japanese free agent pitcher that was just declared. Obviously, if we needed a number four, I'd be willing to roll the dice a little bit more on that. But there's also a name, Kazuma Akimoto, who seems like he doesn't quite have the power of Murakami, but overall he seems like the much more sound player. A little bit older, good defensively at third. Maybe Breslow can find a guy like that to pair alongside a high caliber, you know, star. But, you know, I really do think that if Breslow wants to make a splash, wants to make a serious, you need at least one big freaking name.
I think you need two, honestly. You know, fill out the infield. And one of them, as I said, could be addressed via trade with a guy like Duran, packaging someone else. I'd hate to trade any pitching, honestly, unless it's like a Cutter Crawford type guy. You know, that's kind of a lottery ticket type thing. But he could be appealing as a second or third piece to some teams. But you need two righty bats. And the other thing I didn't mention about Alonso is it's totally achievable. You just need to sign him, basically. It's not going to be a stupid deal. I don't know how many teams are really going to be in the market for him. The Yankees kind of need a third baseman. That's the only other team that kind of scares me. And their name's been connected to him. So, but it's not going to be a major bidding war, I don't think. I think he'll probably be signed by the end of the winter meetings. Last year, I think they were aiming for, what, 175, 200. I don't think he's going to get that. I think it's probably 125 to 150 tops. And just go get him. You can get him. And, you know, there's no excuse. There's nothing complex about it, in other words. And there's no mystery to it. You know what you're getting. You know what he's going to cost, and you know what you're getting. So go get it done. If you don't get it done, you're not a good executive. If you want him as bad as the reports seem to suggest.
Yeah, what's really intriguing about Alonso is the point that you just said, is that the contract part of it, he's not going to get a crazy deal, no matter the duration of it, just because the market for first basemen, especially at his age, and now the fact that he really hasn't gotten crazy money the last two times that he's been quasi on the market. If you sign him, we still have the flexibility to go out there and like, if you want, and I'm not saying they would, but if you did trade for a Tatis or someone that has a crazy contract still, you could do it and still get Alonso. Like, it's feasible because you're not tying up that much money with him, which is super intriguing. You know, the one thing to play devil's advocate, because, you know, we were ecstatic about the quotes that we saw today. The one thing that would scare me, and it would just be flipping what we're used to, is they go out there, because you brought up the point, Nick, is what happens if they go out there and they get player A, player B, and they're not the players we want, and they come out and they go, we believe he can be a number two. Oh, we really think this is the guy that's our number four hitter. And I'm not saying that's going to happen, but I've seen crazier things as a Red Sox fan, especially in these recent years under Chaim Bloom and freaking Breslow. So it's a step in the right direction. They're saying the right things finally. It's not cryptic. It's very clear cut what the expectations are. However, do they have the same filters that we have in our glasses in seeing what a number two starting pitcher is and what a power bat that could fit a three or four in the lineup? And I sure the hell hope so, but it remains to be seen. And as long as I see Murakami as the betting odds favorite to the Sox, I question everything.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's very well said. I think anyone, you know, the fan base is always divided. And obviously, that's just the nature of a sports fan base. It always drives me a little crazy when I see people talking about, one day the fans said this, and then they said this, as if they're, you know, a hive mind. I mean, different parts of the fan base are going to be more vocal in one direction or another. You know, you're always going to be having people that disagree with a decision, regardless of what's made. I'm sure you could have found people on Twitter that were saying the Crochet trade was terrible and this is ridiculous, and why do we want this guy who's not proven? Right now, you know, I am sort of on the fence. I hate to be a centrist on it, but I don't disagree with either side. I think that optimism, I totally respect that. I think pessimism, totally respect that right now. This offseason could go either way. We could absolutely knock it out of the park. We could absolutely fall flat on our faces. My expectation is maybe it's a little bit of a mix between the two, but it's going to depend on not just Breslow's ability as a GM and his aggressiveness as a GM, but also the ability and aggressiveness of other teams. Is someone just going to offer someone a deal that they can't refuse? Maybe it's not even a good deal to offer as a GM, but they say, oh no, we need this guy. You never really know what's going to happen. And I'm sure that this offseason, just like all in the past, we are going to have some big surprises that we're going to go, whoa, I did not see that coming. Any closing thoughts, guys?
No, it's closing up for me is it's a good point. I do believe this is going to be a tipping point for the fan base. I think this offseason, I would agree. I think the fan base is very divided, fragmented into different sections of opinion. And this offseason leading into the regular season is going to pretty much, I think, get a majority on one side or the other.
There's no signing this winter that will impress me as far as Breslow goes. I think he's got the, capability of doing it. I mean, there's not a $700 million man on the market this year.
You could make an argument for Kyle Tucker, maybe, but I don't see the Red Sox in play for that at all.
I'm not a Kyle Tucker guy for some reason. He's projected to get $400 million or so.
Can I ask you a question, Terry?
Yeah.
What could an offseason, what type of offseason would get you where you're like, wow, I'm actually not full in on Breslow, but where you feel confident?
What does that offseason look like? I was actually kind of getting to that. So when I said no signing will impress me, there's not a big guy out there, I guess, aside from Tucker. Fair enough. Creativity will impress me. That's what I want. And I think a Fernando Tatis trade falls under that. I mean, we know it's possible. I think the Padres could be talked into it, but is Breslow going to be the shrewd negotiator that, you know, brings that home? I don't know. You know, Ketel Marte, I mean, that would be kind of impressive, I would say. Get creative. Well, that's a, you know, go for it. That's like, that's Dombrowski. That's like,
I would go kiss Breslow on the mouth if Scooble gets done to the Sox. I will fly there right now, you know?
Yeah, I don't think we're good. I think we would get Joe Ryan before Scooble, but it
would Ryan impress you?
It would impress me, yeah, if we did. But I just want to see those Theo Epstein creative moves, you know. I think Scooble would fall under the Dombrowski category. And if it happens, so be it. But that's what I want to see. And, you know, Bob Nightingale during the trade deadline said a lot of front offices don't like dealing with Craig Breslow. And he had that terrible comment, which I mentioned last week, where he said, you know, when they asked, well, why did you only come away with Dustin May? And he goes, well, teams have to like our players. That was a terrible thing to say. Like, even if it's true, don't say it. Jesus. So anyway, that's what it's going to take for Breslow to get me, you know, on board and converting to being a Bresbian.
Hey, listen, Craig Breslow traded for a World Series winner in Dustin May. How dare you?
Well, at least somebody got a ring on this team. Yeah.
No, absolutely. And, you know, I think I'll follow it up just to tack on to your point. I agree. I think maybe, like, it's fair to say that no one signing is going to tip the scales and blow you away. It's going to take a few signings, a few trades. You know, you need more than just one guy. I think you're absolutely right. Even just Alonso. If it's Alonso and then you clap your hands and act like you're done, no. There's a lot of work to be done, guys. So get to it, you know. Certainly, Breslow has been busy today. I'm sure more quotes will come out over the next few days. It'll be very interesting to see, you know, what the finger on the pulse is regarding a lot of these players, a lot of these moves. And fingers crossed we come out on top, because I think the Red Sox are in a place right now where they can take this division, just like we were sort of expected to coming into this year, you know. The early power rankings are already putting us top 10, which I hate early power rankings like that. But, you know, clearly there's a lot of talent on the roster. You just need to supplement it with the right guys. So thank you, everyone, for listening and watching. We do appreciate it. Like we said, you know, a lot of moves to be made. And the most grueling part of the offseason, no doubt, is watching the clock. And just saying, would something break already? Would some news come out? You know, it's going to be a day by day type of thing where we're all checking our watches, checking the calendar, and slowly but surely watching guys fall off the board, some sooner rather than later. And I'm sure that one of the big names, if past years are to be believed, will probably still be trying to get a deal come spring training. That seems to be a trend lately. I don't know why. I've been Nick, joined by Terry and Chris. We have been the Bastards of Boston. Thank you so much for joining us. Go Red Sox. Take care.